Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live. Brian Beebe, extraordinary musical talent and all-around nice guy, available for yard work next spring. No, I'm kidding. But he's here as my guest host. Julia Seymour joins us now, Media Research Center, newsbusters.org, all that good stuff, as they watch the, quote, mainstream media, which means all of the media except for Fox and Fox Business and talk radio. Is that right, Julia? Do I have it down there?
We watch a lot of media.
Well, I'm sure you do. When I see mainstream media, I mean, I'm trying to think, do you watch everybody but Fox? Is that the way it works?
Sometimes we watch their stuff as well. It often provides contrast. Primarily our focus is national level. So as long as it's something that, you know, potentially the entire country could be seeing, that's what we tend to focus on.
So now the press release that caught my eye is that you're mentioning the economy is doing well and there are good economic numbers, stock market, unemployment rate, and so forth, and even growth rate in the last two quarters. But yet there's no coverage of that. Is that your concern?
Well, I'm very concerned that ABC, CBS, and NBC Evening News shows continue to ignore GDP announcements. We just had one come out last Friday saying that the second quarter growth was confirmed at 3.1%, which is very good. And the first estimate for third quarter growth is 3%. Considering that many people voted for Trump thinking he could help improve the economy, this seems like a newsworthy story that they should be covering, and yet they're not. And unfortunately, I see it as part of a pattern of ignoring good economic news and or downplaying good economic news under his leadership.
Did we have one quarter of 3% growth under Obama in 32 quarters?
There were quarters that were 3% or higher, but there was never an annual rate, and so we're still waiting to
manage an
annual rate of 3% or higher.
Well, how many quarters did, one or two? How many quarters under Obama were 3% or higher?
I would have to go back and look at all those years and pull all those numbers.
Because I've seen Joy Reid on MSNBC laughingly saying that Obama had all these quarters at 3% growth. It sounded like there was a pretty big number of that. But you're saying there isn't one year that averaged.
The annual rate for, an entire year never.
And is that the first time that's happened ever, or what do you think?
No, but it was. GDP growth under Obama was the worst in a long time. Looking at a New York Post report that said he was the first president since Herbert Hoover to have not managed to get 3% growth in for an entire year, any of the time that he was in office.
Any of the time. So Hoover never. Yeah. I thought things were great before the crash. I thought under Hoover, chicken in every pot, car in every garage.
I mean that Obama was the first president since Hoover.
It was bad at the end, but I'm saying Hoover had good growth at the beginning, I'm pretty sure, in the beginning of his term. Let's just say probably means the first time since he was in office that we didn't have a quarter,
annual.
For a whole year, Brian Beebe, thank you for correcting that.
It's confusing, I know.
I know what you mean. But see, President Obama, his defenders will say, well, there was that horrible financial crash, yada, yada, we had the meltdown and all this, and it took us forever to get out of it. And then we had growth beginning from March of 2009, so we've had sustained growth, even though it was anemic growth. It was, in fact, growth. So
was growth, that's true.
And so actually, historically, hate to say it, Julia, but usually when you have this much growth in consecutive quarters over, years, that usually means you're going to have a contraction or a adjustment the other way.
Yeah, I think certainly a lot of people are taking the pulse of various economists and trying to find out, you know, if they think that's going to happen. I haven't seen predictions that you know, recession is coming because of that, but, you know, I'm sure that's on some people's minds.
Because if Donald Trump has a recession, you might as well forget it. I mean, you'd have to have him just...
That'll be, you know, huge news.
You would have to take him out of...
Wall-to-wall coverage.
He would be whisked away in the middle of the night, I think, at that point, wouldn't he? I mean, when you're at 38% approval in nationwide polls, you can't afford a recession.
The voters would certainly act, you know, if they...
I mean, That would not be good. He would have to hope there were 30 miles of tunnels under Berlin...
But that's precisely the media point here, that they disdain President Trump, and, you know, and they have certainly disliked many presidents before. And when they dislike an administration or that administration's policies, they downplay news that people would think make them look good. And with Obama, they were constantly trying to prop up the economic news.
Well, I understand that, but let's face it, Trump hates them too. He calls them dishonest and fake, and I mean, that usually when you, pick a fight.
I agree. There's hostility on both sides.
Yeah. And Nixon didn't like the press, and they didn't like Nixon. Kennedy loved the press. They loved JFK, I'm talking about. And even Bobby Kennedy had his fans, you know, David Halberstam and David Broder and all that crew. Jack Newfield, he had his crew that loved him. But not Trump, except
but
Fox.
There is liberal media talking about the GDP growth. I mean, the NPR acknowledged this.
Oh, really?
The New York Times, Business Insider. There are plenty of
because they have
news outlets that still say this is newsworthy. We do have to cover this story. I just wish the networks could catch on that they should cover it, regardless of who's in the White House.
Yeah, CBS, ABC, NBC won't even do it. Not even a reader. You know, readers.
They didn't even like post the number on screen. You know, it would not take that much time or effort on their part to cover the story, and yet they did not cover it this month. They did not cover it in August. So, you know,
don't you think they're saying? You know, they're saying, "Well, screw Trump. We're not going to legitimize him by giving any good news because he's a reckless maniac, and we can't say anything good about him." And isn't that what's going on here?
I can't swear to it because I don't have, you know, I haven't heard anything from a fly on the wall in their meeting. But it certainly looks like they are choosing not to cover good economic stories under his leadership, yes.
Well, I think that's fair to say. Hey, by the way, do this George Papadopoulos thing. Have you noticed there are no pro golfers that are Greek? We figured that out. You know, there's no Jack Papanicholas or, I mean, it's just one of those things. As an aside, but George Papadopoulos. You think there's a smoking gun there or no?
I couldn't say honestly. That's more of our news department stories.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm not even up on.
Oh, you're doing you handle the economic desk, right? That's your
That's
your purview.
Yeah, that's my beat.
Well, how good can it get? Do you think with the if they do the tax cuts and all that kind of stuff, and the are you looking at 4% growth maybe, or what do you think?
I think that's something an economist should weigh in
me. You're just watching.
But it will, I think, get if the economy gets better and better. You know, I don't know how much growth is possible because I'm not an economist, but I do think that if that happens, it gets harder and harder for the liberal media to ignore it, and more blatant when they do.
I see.
It.
Yeah, there's no question that's been a double standard of coverage. Mm-hmm. But then again, back in the day, you didn't have Fox, you didn't have talk radio, you didn't have Fox Business, so. You know, it's kind of moved around a bit, right? I mean,
I don't think that excuses, you know,
CBS,
I don't think the
ABC,
networks are
NBC,
excused from doing these stories any more than Fox is excused from covering something newsworthy that might, you know, be something they don't want to cover. I don't think that's okay either.
Were you watching media back in the Obama administration?
Yes, I have been with the MRC for more than 11 years. So I actually came in at the tail end of the Bush years and was witness to some of the ways that they spun the economy negatively before the recession, actually, and then under Obama as well for his entire tenure.
Well, Laura Ingraham just ripped the flesh off of George W. Did you hear that little rant she talked about? When he got in, we had 4.2% unemployment. When he left, we had 7.8%. When he got in, we had $4,000 more in median income. She ripped him. No, the
I did not catch that, but that, statistically, I believe those numbers are correct.
Yeah, she was not happy with, and then she said we have unlimited wars. Well, he had done his speech along with President Obama going after Trump without naming Trump, so then Laura went after Bush big time. You ought to check that rant out. It's pretty entertaining.
I will.
But she's definitely in the Steve Bannon wing. And by the way, if you, do you ever see Steve Bannon in person?
I have not, no.
Well, somebody that does see him, we're agreeing here in the studio that somebody should tell him to shave. He never shaves. I don't, you know, to me, it's the whole insurgency campaign would have more legs if he would shave. It just as an aside. Does that make any sense? I'm sorry, Joey. I didn't mean to lower the bar. You know, he just looks like Otis the Drunk from Andy Griffith. You know, he's always the day after, a little disheveled.
Julia, it's Brian. Can we ask you, in an atmosphere of the president calling media fake news a lot, who are we supposed to trust?
Oh, goodness. well, I think it behooves everyone to try to take most things with a grain of salt and always consider where something is coming from, what agenda might be behind it. And that goes for media and politicians.
That's true. But it doesn't mean that a biased paper can't have a straight story correct, right?
Exactly. Right. I completely agree. There are good reporters and bad reporters. There are outlets that take their claims of objectivity more seriously than
Julia,
others.
Julia, some of those stories from The Guardian on the weapons of mass destruction were pretty good now and after the fact, going, you know, leading up to the whole thing. So go back and look at that. Anyway, thank you so much, Julia Seymour. We appreciate it. Media Research Center, newsbuster.org. Thanks. Keep watching the mainstream media, and we'll keep touching base.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. All right, take care, and we'll come back. Matt Damon is, do you know Matt Damon? We all know Matt Damon. I think his mother's a teacher. He's got this movie out slamming private school choice vouchers, saying, you know, it's all about cash and corrupt. And so we'll have an opponent of that line of thinking calling in, so it's a pretty controversial topic. Coming up on The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.
Two Bridges was one of the toughest neighborhoods in New York, especially in the Al Smith projects. It was a no man's land with no rules. On Christmas Eve 1951, Mac Pastamadeo vanished without a trace while walking home with his little boy Angelo. Now 13, Angelo's a gang member and the only witness to the brutal murder of an undercover cop who holds a clue to Mac's disappearance 6 years ago. Stalked by killers, Angelo becomes part of an unlikely alliance of a priest, a mob boss, and a police detective in order to uncover the truth behind the murder and Mac's disappearance. Weepers by Nick Chiarkis.
At Troy Research, we understand that success is determined by your customers. To realize the greatest success possible, you need to understand what they want and why. Your customers have opinions to share with you. As researchers, our assignment is to gather those opinions, illuminate the issues, and shed the light of understanding on decision-making. Where can good research take your business? Call or email to talk about it. Troy Research at 608-271-8884 or email jlittle@troyresearch.com. Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
In real estate, you want to work with Tim Rayl.
When I started Revere Trails out in Windsor, I asked for Tim's advice I'm absolutely amazed at how much he knows about the development of real estate and the marketing part than other realtors.
Let's get ink on paper today with Realtor Tim Rail of Coldwell Banker Success, 698-7653.
He's got a phenomenal knowledge of the product and what it takes to get the product to market.
Tim Rail, 698-7653.
Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Or email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
Have an interview here hopefully soon with Gene Allen, founder and CEO of the Center for Education Reform, who is not happy about Matt Damon's narrated film Backpack Full of Cash, which talks about school choice being harmful. And what you hear in the debate about school choice is that there isn't any way to check the performance. I mean, there isn't the kind of supervision or scrutiny, that kind of thing. And the defenders of choice will say, well, who cares? It's up to the parents. Parents can decide. And I bet you haven't had any kids, Brian?
Two boys.
Two. I met one of your sons.
Public schools.
They go close to the mic.
Public schools.
Yeah, public schools. And my kids went to public schools, and most people's kids go to public schools. But if my public school was so bad and there was crime and gangs and concentrations of bad stuff and the teachers,
or they just didn't teach anything.
Right. I could see where I'd want my kid out of there.
Yeah.
Right. Whether it be a different public school or, you know, if I could get a voucher at that point to go to a private school that I liked, as a parent, I'd say, well, great. Yeah. And it's a very touchy topic because, you know, my mother taught 35 years.
Yeah.
And, she always was jealous because if kids got kicked out of the private school, where did they go? To the public school.
Yeah.
And she couldn't just kick her kids out, you know. They had to just make room for them, you know. And every year there was a kid that would steal from her purse, or somebody was, you know, abused at home and had all kinds of problems. And my mother would have to devote a lot of the time away from the other kids to that kid or kids, maybe two or three kids. And that is a problem. But the private school, if you are out of line, and they can just send you the door, you know, don't let the door hit your back on the way out kind of thing, you know. Now, people, oh, Mitch, that's not true. But, you know, it is. I mean, you know, you want to go maybe to a private school because you're Catholic or whatever the case. And historically, you had to pay for that. And you also pay taxes for the public school. And this whole thing started in Wisconsin with Polly Williams, who was a black woman Democrat member of the assembly in Milwaukee, and she started the whole thing back in the 80s or 90s and said, well, look, how come the president can send his daughter to a private school and my constituents can't because of their money, pocketbook? That's what drove the whole thing. And now it's expanding. And Matt Damon is basically here to say, well, no, it's corrupt and it's crooked and it's all about the money. What do you think about this, Brian?
Well, you know, I have a friend that teaches up in the public schools up by me. And I'm wondering if private schools are better at keeping kids in line. There's less disruptive kids. Well,
if you don't get in line, you kick you out.
Yeah,
right?
But I mean, maybe are they just better at it, and there's less trouble like that. But I have a friend who teaches up by me up in Reedsburg schools, and she spends a lot of time one on one teaching. One student that's been disruptive, grade school kids that are just completely without without rules. And she'll so this public schools work hard to get kids in line too.
They do, and I sub every once in a while, and I won't say which school district because if I said it, you know, I'll do it again. But you can have kids, you know, disruptive. And of course, they prey on the sub, right? I mean, they see a sub.
That's historic, though. They've
I know. But you say, can you at least try to stop talking for 2 minutes? And of course, they don't read. Like, you read one page, just read one page. You know, pretty soon you're begging.
Yeah.
And I try to tell stories. Like, who killed President Lincoln? You know, they go, they want to compete then. And I'll give them the name. You know how I know that? I read it in a book when I was your age, you know, whatever the case. Because when we were kids, to know things, we had to read about them. We couldn't just look it up on our phone. We couldn't just Google it on our phone. And, you know, we had to read stuff.
Encyclopedias.
Well, encyclopedias or books or whatever. You know, I learned early on that Ted Williams' lifetime batting average was .344. I read it somewhere. It was a sports magazine or something, you know. That little period before you really are into girls, you're like 8 or 9. And the girl thing hasn't really started yet, so you're reading all that stuff about the baseball and whatever.
Making plastic models. Cars.
You didn't do that? I didn't have
Tester's glue? That was pretty good.
I didn't have the aptitude for that. The model thing was too tough for me. I was in the sports, and I was a sports fan, because all my friends in the neighborhood were older than I was. And so sports was everything, and so I couldn't do anything with my hands practically, and which is, says a lot about life.
Me neither.
Well, I tell people, you know, you're better off knowing how to do something like that, because first of all, wives like that.
They like jobs.
And my wife would say, go clean the car. And I'd say, well, I'm watching this documentary on Sinatra or Arnold Palmer.
Yeah.
And that didn't go over with my wife. No, she didn't like that.
No, sitting there too much.
You know, she was nice to me when I would clean. If I would clean, you'd try to clean up, and I say, okay, I'm going to clean. And if I would vacuum, and I would pick up, and I would spray Pine Sol, she would be frisky.
Oh, jeez.
So I realized that Pine Sol was an aphrodisiac. I mean, that would turn her on, man. If she smelled Pine Sol, she'd go in and put something on, you know. Little slip or, you know, whatever the case. But that's about the only time she was really, you know, nice to me.
Yeah.
But that's something that wives like. They like clean, neat things, you know. And when things break, they want you to be able to fix them.
You know,
that wasn't going to happen with me, right? So, I mean, I can say, well, no, but I could talk about JFK if you want. You know, it just doesn't go over. Oh. I mean, you know, I could talk about elections or golf tournament trivia.
You married the wrong girl. I don't know if you knew that.
You know, we get along better now than we ever did when we were married. And frankly, she was very nice during my stroke. You know, she came to the hospital like a lot and kind of controlled the visitors. Yeah, she took over. It was really amazing. Yeah. So I thank Gail publicly for handling, doing something during my stroke where you were very helpful. And she and Brian are married now 20 years, I think. So 20 more years, I hope.
Wow.
Yeah, well, it's one of those deals, you know. You just, that women are from Mars, no, men are from Mars, women are from Venus was an interesting book back in the day because it talked about how men like to put their Mr. Fix-It hat on all the time because a woman will say, well, I'm upset about this or I'm concerned about this. And they just want you to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Just listen. They don't want you to say, well, you know, because the man always says, well, then just do this, you know, Mr. Fix-It.
You married her in that era, though.
Nowadays,
I think kids that get married decide quickly what each is good at and allow
them
to
go with the flow. Yeah.
My wife was way better with tools than I was.
Oh, yeah. Well, my daughter, my daughter put together the entire entertainment center. And she had her little screwdriver with all the different types of blade there.
Sure.
And she had her tongue out. She's like 8 or 9 years old. She put the whole thing together. I didn't have the patience. I couldn't even get out of the box. You know, I just said, what is this? What are these little plastic things? You know, I just didn't have the patience.
Yeah.
I'd go crack open a bottle of scotch after, you know.
Mm-hmm.
John Roach, who's a, you know, very funny guy, John Roach Projects, he talked about the time he tried to put a swing set together for his kids and tried that for like an hour and a half, and
my hands are all cut up, and
went inside and just had a bottle, a glass of scotch, and
blood
cried.
Blisters,
you know?
Oh yeah, all that.
I mean, certain things just, you know, are beyond the scope. You know, You ever trying to put a desk together? One of those desks that comes in a box?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, I have.
I mean, that's... But see, there's a word for a man that if a woman, a wife, a girlfriend, if they use this word about you, you know you're in trouble.
What is
it? You know what the word is?
What is it?
Putz.
Really?
That's a bad one.
You're putz. You're going to putz more? You're a putz. You're a putz.
Putzing around.
That is not a good word for a man.
No, I would say not. But I'm a putz, and I've never had been called one.
You've never been called a putz by
no,
a woman?
No.
See, I won't say who did, but, you know, a woman did do that, and, you know.
Isn't that Yiddish? Don't you have to be from New York to be a putz?
Well, I think what happens is if your wife comes from a family of working men with their hands and handy men and guys who can lift fences and pipes and all that, have dirt under their fingernails.
The other word is useless, which I qualify for. Not putz, just useless. I've been called that.
Well, and then if you're a guy who plays golf and likes to watch old singers, I mean, it just doesn't go over, you know. Yeah. Johnny Carson tapes? No, that doesn't always go over. Yeah. So you got to find somebody that likes that.
Yeah, they catch you in a lie.
Conversation was good. I could do that, but then the conversation was about things that, you know what I was told on that? Because you're supposed to be focused on, you know, important things like money or the kids or the apartment.
On them.
And see, if you're not doing that and you're going off on some of the topic, you're on a tangent.
Yep.
You're on a tangent. Well, a tangent.
You never try to understand what I'm saying. That's the other one they accuse you.
Well, that's true.
You never try to understand what I think and what I want.
Right.
Did I tell you that?
But I was on a tangent. I was always on a tangent because I wasn't on whatever topic I was supposed to be on. Yeah. All right. Now to go on a tangent. Phil Blackwell was a former minister at the United Church of Christ, First United Church of Christ on Wisconsin Avenue. And he is, I would call him a progressive thinker, but he's very much a believer, and he will weigh in on the whole debate between civil law and church law with regard to being gay. Big news this week in the Madison Diocese. We'll talk about it. Mitch Hanks Show, MadisonTalks.com.
Joe here from Comedy on State. Looking for something to do for your girl's bachelorette party? Trust me, we can take care of that for you. Come to Comedy on State. It's so easy. You can go to madisoncomedy.com. You can purchase your tickets right from the website. You don't even have to talk to anybody over the phone if you're a weird person. Let's be honest, you're probably a weirdo. You're listening to Mitch.
For a list of upcoming Comedy Club performers or to purchase tickets, go to madisoncomedyclub.com and click shows. Performer bios are available by clicking on their pictures.
That's Comedy on State. madisoncomedy.com or 256-0099.
The all-new Mitch Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
At P3 Pro, we're invested in creating a dynamic video experience for our clients. Everything from planning, shooting, and editing your events, commercials, webcasts, or films. P3 Pro has 27 years of industry standard experience, working to make your vision a reality. We stand apart from your traditional run-of-the-mill production experience and create memorable, moving, breathtaking imagery that conveys your message in a powerful way. We take your vision and turn it into a work of art. The art of storytelling, the art of beautifully crafted imagery, the art of persuasion. Visit us on the web at p3pro.xyz or call 608-571-3776. That's 608-571-3776.
6AM Marketing is a Wisconsin-based ad agency that doesn't look or act like other ad agencies. They don't follow conventional thinking and constantly push themselves and their clients to test the bounds of how far they can go. The result is relationships that have lasted more than 10 years. Clients refer to 6AM and their work as fresh, insightful, strategic, edgy, and creative. 6AM shows customers why your products and services are better than the competition. 6AM's brand smart process helps you establish your brand in the market for years to come. With a client's marketing team by its side, 6AM digs for the business problem the client is trying to solve and the business goals and objectives they hope to achieve, examining the market, competitors, the brand's consumers, and messaging to define a brand proposition that is both compelling and unique to the market. 6 a.m. marketing. They do it differently, and they do it well. Go to 6ammarketing.com. That's www.6ammarketing.com.
Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
We're back, Mitch Hanks Show, on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live. Brian Beebe sitting in as guest host. Did his own podcast at 3, sings and performs beautifully.
I invited myself, by the
way. Yes, well, that's all right. Now you're going to, is dinner almost ready? No. Also, you can see him sing and play piano Thursday through Sunday at the wonderful Sorrento's restaurant and lounge up in Lake Delton, technically. It's right by the Dells.
Yeah.
Do I just say the Dells? Is that what you do?
It's Lake Delton.
Yeah. Anyway, so we have a live guest on the phone who I really have great respect for, very intelligent, has done many podcasts himself on MadisonTalks.com, Phil Blackwell. But before we bring him in, the backdrop, as I read the Daily Cardinal story from Sunday the 29th, a petition to remove the leader of Madison's Catholic community, who last week emailed local priests a list of considerations to use when deciding whether to give gay individuals funeral services, has received thousands of signatures since it started circulating Thursday. More than 4,000 individuals had signed the petition as of Sunday evening, calling on Pope Francis to remove Bishop Robert Morlino, who heads the Madison Diocese. Strong language, and they're saying that he's insensitive to LGBTQ community members and so forth. And again, I don't have a Catholic on here. I've got, in fact, a Methodist pastor who was the retired, do I say retired pastor?
Blackwell? Yeah, that's okay, yes.
Retired pastor at the First United Methodist Church, is that
correct? In Chicago.
In Chicago also, you were
in Madison.
You were in Madison on Wisconsin Avenue.
Yeah.
And but I shouldn't limit this to just the Catholic debate or Catholic consternation here, because I know the bishop in Madison is a little more, shall we say, traditional in some of these views. And I know there was a longtime choral director at the parish in Verona who was relieved because of his openness about being gay. Apparently 5 people complained, but yet there were scores of people who adored the person. So, you know, we've had this kind of back and forth and tension over the years, certainly in the Catholic Church. I'm sure it happens in the Protestant denominations, too, some more conservative than others. Is that fair to say, Pastor?
Yes, and the whole issue around gay and lesbian and transgender issues has been sort of the case in point for religious organizations to try and come to terms with some of its own structural issues. So you've got bishops and presbyters and leaders of religious organizations, and then you've got the civil law, perhaps in contrast or in connection with the church law, and then you've got what we might refer to as God's law, which is the sort of the decisions that individual lay people and pastors make related to, in this case, let's say gay marriage. The First United Methodist Church in Madison has gone on record a couple of years ago saying that they will do gay marriages there because that's the law, even though
the civil law.
That's the civil
law. Right.
Even though the church law in United Methodism, which is kind of an international group, says don't do it. So they're standing outside the consensus. Now, standing outside the consensus has a bit of a risk to it because charges could be brought and all of that. But at some point, those civil law, church law, personal apprehension of God's law can all be in conflict with each other.
I'm sure they are, but isn't it sort of established that in a pluralistic society, and the most progressive person will tell me in an interview or a debate that they don't care if, say, the Catholic Church chooses not to do a gay marriage or, you know, whatever the case, as long as, you know, they it's allowed to happen in civil discourse or if a church chooses to. In other words, I don't think we've seen to the point yet where we're going to have armed agents of the police department going into the parish and saying you must marry this couple. We're not to that point, are we yet?
No, no, no. But if you're a baker who doesn't do cakes for gay couples, you might have.
So, but you're back. Okay. You're a baker in a business,
yeah.
As opposed to the woman in the basement baking the cake of the parish. That would be a different yeah. ballgame, right?
No, I think, Mitch, you're right. That
not woman, there, man, or woman. I should say. I don't be sexist yeah. on that. But go ahead.
No, well, but there is a kind of regard made toward religious organizations that there is a set of rules and expectations that each one of those organizations sets up, and they mm-hmm. may be in line with the civil law. They usually are, but occasionally there are times when a church will step outside of the civil law. You know, when the Quakers were very insistent upon pacifism in World War II.
Right.
That is an instance of a church law reflecting, they thought, God's law that was in opposition to the civil law. You have the Native Americans with peyote being part of their ritual and civil law coming down on them. The Mormons in polygamy 100 years ago. So there are a number of historical times when civil law and church law have been in conflict. Usually, it does not end up with the police coming in and closing down the church or the synagogue.
I worked with a self-described born-again Christian at one point in an office, and he would often carry the Bible with him to the bathroom, which I always thought was one of those "he doth protest too much" deals. But
well, you never know if there's enough paper in there.
Well, no, that's, see, I knew. I said this guy's funny. He's a funny pastor. Very quick.
Wow.
But where you kind of want the world to know that you're on the right path, even though that may mean you're really not. But but you've seen, I'm sure, within your own church congregations, you've seen people at both ends of the spectrum on these questions, right? Because whether it's gay rights or abortion, even, which is, I mean, these are sacred issues for a lot of people, and there's no gray area, and they can cite, can they not, actual text, divine text on these matters.
Well, Shakespeare said that the devil himself can quote scripture for his own cause.
Well,
and I've heard that a lot in church.
Shakespeare was a smart guy, but where's the gray area in Romans chapter 1, I guess would be my question.
Well, I think that's one of the real challenges to communities of faith, which could be also academic communities and political communities. Where is there a kind of acceptance of the gray area, which is much larger than the black or the white area? And what permission is there to stand outside the consensus and still be considered part of the community? Do you always end up being excommunicated if you disagree with the norm?
Mm-hmm.
So when I was serving a church, well, serving the church in Madison, First United Methodist Church, they had gone on record, as I said, to be amenable to doing same-sex marriages as a legal event. And I know there are members of that church for whom that was not a comfortable position to take. But they found within the community of the church that there was enough to hold them there, and there was enough acceptance of people standing outside of the norm. And so that's always been the issue. How can you, as a family, as a law office or as a church, create an understanding where there's an appreciation for the person even when there's a disagreement? Not to mention politically in the United States right now.
But are you, though, taking the position, if somebody wants to challenge you on the interpreting, say, the Apostle Paul, gee, what did he mean by this? Is there a gray area, Pastor? Is there a loophole here? In other words, is it an abomination or not? Yep. What do you say?
I say, well, let's do a little bit of biblical study, because there First of all, the word homosexuality is not in the Bible. It's a 1890s invention by a British scholar, and it then gets read into the interpretations of the Greek and the Hebrew and the Latin texts. But there's no such word as homosexuality in the Bible. So then, what are we talking about when we're talking about that in biblical terms? But that makes it more complex, not simpler. But it does mean that, given that probably in Paul's day, there was no sense that homosexuality could be a given condition of a person,
right,
not a choice.
Yeah. Right.
Do we go with reason and science, for instance, that tells us that some things we now know, some things we didn't know 2,000 years
ago? Well, isn't that sort of like thou shalt not covet the neighbor's goods, when in fact that included slaves, and we don't have slaves anymore? So,
right, think, yeah. And yet there are plenty of justifications for slavery right up through the 1860s in the United States, using religious texts as the basis.
And I've heard it said that Paul was referring to gang rape or something. There was a Sodom and Gomorrah backdrop to this, and there was no really addressing monogamous relationships, and that wasn't part of the deal.
I think that part is true, and again, there's a lot written about that and then over against that, but that means there's a gray area. That there's a necessity to try and read deeper into the text than simply to take it as a bumper sticker.
Right.
Remember, in the old days, which wasn't all that long ago for me, but there it was the bumper sticker. The Bible says it, and I believe it.
Right.
That's open and shut the case. Well, part of the issue is, how do we keep the case from being open and shut before there's actually any real searching for various truths?
Well, I got to tell you, and again, my sister was a theater major, and I grew up with a different experience in observing various cultural patterns that maybe somebody who didn't grow up. I went to Butler and the dance majors and the theater. I'm not stereotyping, but you had women who would have lunch with gay men on one side of the salad bar, and the other side of the salad bar were the, quote, guy guys who were just talking about football. And nobody thought, at least in that setting, that you could talk somebody out of their sexuality. It was the way it was, but I know that contradicts fundamentalist teachings, right, Pastor?
Well, I think there are presumptions that say that this is something that is a choice, and you can unchoose it. And then becomes all of that kind of transformation effort. So basically, we're given up about 30 years ago.
Well, the question there is, and I'm not saying I have all the answers on that, but I will say this, when did you choose to be straight, right?
Yeah.
When did you choose? I mean, I had Congressman Plaquette, who's openly gay, and I said, just jokingly at the time, I said, did you ever have that Farrah Fawcett poster on your wall and he goes, yep. I go, it didn't work for you, did it? I mean, he just kind of laughed, but.
Yeah. They had Rock Hudson, probably.
Well, the point of it is, it either works for you or it doesn't. I don't think you're doing a lot of thinking about it, are you?
One of the sort of talking points, sometimes people think is a little frivolous, but I'm left-handed, and several centuries ago, I could have been killed for that. Sinister, meaning left-handed.
Yes, right.
And it was not an accepted thing, even up until when I was in grade school, and teachers would say, no, don't write with that hand, write with that
right one. Left. Correct.
I didn't choose to be left-handed, but left-handed. It's worked, except when I'm trying to open a door or trying to work a toaster or something.
When you say you're left-handed, I think you're talking about your politics. No, I'm kidding. It's a little joke there.
Come on now.
I know.
But there are conditions that we have that we didn't choose. Now, at the same time, there are actions that we engage in that we do choose.
Yes.
So let's say that there's a same-sex couple and there's abusive sexual behavior. That is abusive, whether it's gay or straight. Yeah. The choice is an abusive act, and you can't explain that away.
Well, and certainly adultery would still be on the table, right? I mean, you could still cheat on your partner. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, some of those sins. Why is it that America, and I know maybe puritanical history, Pastor, but we seem to put more weight on sexual sin than we put on other sins, you know, greed and gluttony and, you know, envy. And all, and we don't put as much weight on those other ones.
No, I mean, there are a lot of them listed in the Bible, and people pick and choose ones that are to their advantage, probably. In the United Methodist tradition, which is a peculiar reference to John Wesley and Wesleyanism and all, but this is not unique, except I think we've described it rather particularly, that understand, let's say, gay issues, you look at Scripture and you look very hard and read very faithfully what it says and where those prohibitions are in those six passages, and then where it is where it says there's neither Jew nor Greek nor male nor female nor slave nor free, we're all one, and you try and balance out what's the text here. But in addition to that, you take tradition. What has in this case the Christian tradition done for 2,000 years around these sets of issues?
Right.
And my guess is it's probably pretty complex rather than just simply negative. Then you take in reason. What do we now know that we did not know before? What we were saying earlier about this being a given, and it's now more complex than we first thought.
Well, we don't want to stone harlots anymore, do we? Or that was a...
No. No, but now you're into transgender issues and other variations on a theme that are, in some ways, illuminating to say sexuality is a pretty complex thing, and it might not be left-handed or right-handed. It might be across a rather long continuum. And then you deal with experience. And for me, the question of who do I know that is gay, and what have I learned in that relationship? And most likely, what happened was there are a number of people who I revered as great leaders, great religious people, great scholars, who I then subsequently learned what their sexuality was, and that could not undo what I already thought. That the sexuality was a piece of information, but when I looked at my experience of that person, the reason that we have developed through scientific experience, the tradition over 2,000 years, and the really complex understanding of Scripture, I say, okay, we can learn some things now that we didn't know 200 years ago, like, you know, slavery.
Right. Guest host Brian, Pastor, a question from Brian Beebe. Go ahead.
Pastor, we've talked for some minutes now, and I really can't tell from what we've said if you're in favor of giving funeral services to gay couples.
Well, that was the Catholic Church.
I'm asking him.
Yeah,
and isn't it all about being as Christ, as Christianity is about being as Christ-like as you can be, right?
Yeah.
And isn't that the whole idea? I mean, Jesus was all about acceptance, and he cavorted with lepers and everything else. And the dirtiest, lowest of everybody was worthy of his attentions.
That's where I am. I'm with that. I have conducted a gay wedding ceremony legally and without pushback from the denomination. Certainly have had funeral services of people who had been gay. None of that was definitive of anything that that mattered when it comes to the actual implementation of one's faith.
Homosexuality was far more accepted in centuries past than it is now. when the Bible was young, and wasn't it Greek, much more rampant
then? The Greeks were notorious.
Yeah, and they spoke of it in the Bible as man with another man.
Before the Bible, though.
Just an abomination or whatever. But
Alexander the Great might have had, you know, a couple of understudies.
Yeah, it's lots of...
Well, go ahead, Pastor.
Well, that's all true. And when Paul is writing to the Romans, and he hadn't been to Rome yet,
he was
basically trying to distinguish between what is the kind of particularity of being a follower of Jesus as contrasted to the norms that you were just saying,
yeah,
which were kind of wide open and
accepting,
profligate.
Yeah.
And he's saying, no, that's not who we are. But that's, you know, the abomination is that perhaps, let's say, the wide open profligate experience, it is not about a particular couple in an abiding relationship with each other.
Yeah,
well, I've heard that debate. One describes sort of a public, sort of decadent set of behaviors versus the monogamous, respectful relationship, which is, I've heard, people have said who are more progressive that Paul didn't mean that, but of course, we might say what Paul meant.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I never could figure out who decided what job is which disciple. Somehow Paul was going to talk about this issue. I don't know what the other, they chopped liver, Pastor? I mean, the other
well,
the other disciples?
You know, Peter wrote a bit. A few others didn't make the cut, apparently.
No, I was going to say, I don't know, you draw straws on this stuff or what? I mean,
Well, you know, those letters, the epistles, are the... historically, the first things written after Jesus, even before the Gospels. And they were very addressed to very specific people at very specific times. By the time you get to the Gospels, and particularly the later ones, Matthew and John, you get more and more of a global overview of things. So by the time you get to John, you got almost a Greek impressionistic view of the world. Paul was writing about some very specific things that he heard about, some very specific needs and people. But to me, God's law is over against church law, I would say.
Mm.
But then that becomes an individual way of how you interpret God's law. So that in our denomination right now, there is a real controversy over what do you do over gay marriage. And then there are several people who have decided one way or the other what's right. And Presbyterians have gone through this, and the Episcopal Church has gone through this, and whether we make it through it, I don't know. But it was slavery back in the 1840s, and it's war during you know, the pacifist time, and it's this now.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy hearing you speak, and I wish you were not retired. Do you ever do private services? We could just show up and you, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, call me. I'll come and preach to you. But so far, it's not done any good.
Well, gee, you talk about getting the last shot in. Boy, there's a there's one across the bow right there.
Yeah.
Well, I always say, well, I haven't committed any serious crimes yet that I can recall, and, you know.
Yeah.
I'm
thinking about it.
I mean, it could be worse. I could, you know, be a serial killer, but... no, you're right, though. I guess faith is an aspirational exercise, right, Pastor? I mean, we're all trying to strive for spiritual healing, spiritual health. And
well, I think there's a way in which we're trying to at least access life in some way that is life-giving to us and to others. And not everybody's going to be responding to the same thing. I do have to say that it's no question why Jesus was crucified when you read the stuff he was saying about, you know, it says that you should love your neighbors and hate your enemies, but I say love your enemies as well as your neighbors. Well, that's not going to play well in the civil setting. You've heard it say an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say don't resist an evildoer. And yet we've got a current president who, when asked, what is your favorite Bible verse, after hemming and hawing for a while, say, well, it's an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And I thought, my goodness, did he never read that Jesus said, no? That's one law that's off the books. So there's a progression. There's a.
Well, the answer is yes. He never read that.
No. I know that, but I'm saying that the understanding of one's religious faith is always in process.
Yes,
and personal.
And there are things that I probably accepted years and years ago that I no longer find compelling. And there are things that denominations, churches. I mean, when I started ministry, it was not allowed for me to conduct a wedding ceremony of somebody who'd been divorced.
Mm.
And then it was somebody...
There's hope for me then, Pastor. Yeah.
I know. Well, I've been nice to you all this time, but... But then it was, you could do it if the person was the innocent party.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Okay, and then no-fault divorce case.
Plenty of guilt on both sides, I would have to say.
And so you go back and look. I mean, it started out even in Methodism, the clergy were not to be married. Uh-huh. That was okay to be married, and then you couldn't get divorced, and then you couldn't do services of people who are divorced. And now it's a much more complex thing where it is up to the pastor to decide, is this something that is in line with your faith commitment?
Well, we're out of time, but I want to tell people, if you want to listen to the pastor, he's got some amazing podcasts on MadisonTalks.com. Go there. You can hear full Blackwell's podcasts on a number of different topics, and they're superb. I was here when
I've got a few more to do, Mitch. I'll be up there.
Oh, I hope so. And you can also go on Facebook Live. We've added a little dimension to our work here. Uh-huh. But thank you so much, Pastor Blackwell. That was so good. I feel better when I talk to you. I don't despair quite as much.
Good. I feel like I've served a purpose.
Well, there has to be more than a couch and a pizza and a cable. There's got to be more than that. Thank you, Pastor. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Brian Beebe, it's been fun, huh? The pastor's pretty good. I like him a lot. He's about a cooler.
I could really dig in and...
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you could, yeah. And he would love it, I'm sure.
But he's a good guy.
He's a good guy. Bob Keller, we thank you for the space. We're in West Washington Avenue. Check out all the places Tuscan plays, Washington Court, Whitcomb Square for seniors on the west side. Go to KellerApartments.com. That's KellerApartments.com. I want to thank Mike Brockville for engineering the broadcast. Brian Beebe, the talented singing wonder... over here.
I've been here for hours.
He's been here for a long time.
I have been.
And he's been the guest host, and I appreciate that. And Bob Abella, the wide world of radio, the classic radio shows of the 30s and 40s coming up next. I'm Mitch Hank. We'll see you next week.